Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Larry Schneider, attorney registration number 34183 for the appellant Luis Silva. We are here today because of a remand this court made and what Luis Silva believes is an abuse of discretion of the trial courts on the remand. Quick history, this case has now been to trial three times. It was first heard in March 2008, there was a hung jury. Heard again September 2008 with a verdict for the appellant. The appeal then went up. The argument there was mostly related to can an illegal immigrant bring a lost wage claim? And this court made a very specific finding on remand. And that was, number one, there was to be a hearing to decide whether Mr. Silva, the appellant, was legal or not, and if he was deemed to be here illegally, then there should be a hearing as to why Silva is not entitled to lost future wages, a damages hearing. On remand, the trial court, over an objection from the appellant, held that the damages hearing would be on causation and on damages. During that trial, the jury found on verdict form A that the appellant had injuries, damages, losses, but that they were not related to causation. Therefore, it was a defense verdict. Now, pursuant to Court of Appeals Rule 35F and well-established case law, the trial court on remand is to follow the direction of the Court of Appeals, and we believe that she abused her discretion not following it by allowing causation to come back into this case. By doing so, we believe that in essence, the entire case, liability, all prongs, were then retried in this case. The argument being that, and it was clear in the answer brief that was filed, the issue was in this multi-car accident, which car hit and caused the injury to Mr. Silva. Yet the appellee was already found negligent. And as you know, there are four prongs to negligence. All four prongs were proven in the second trial because there was a verdict of over $80,000. So they had to have found duty, breach, causation, and damages. As such, by interjecting causation back into this third remanded trial, in essence, retried the whole case.
Mr. Schneider, did Mr. Silva claim any damages at the third trial that he had not claimed at the second trial?
No. As a matter of fact, Your Honor, there was a claim withdrawn, which was Mr. Silva was here illegally, and as such, the lost wage claim was withdrawn prior to that. He had had no additional treatment. There was no additional care. It was for the same exact injuries that were heard in the second trial.
Mr. Schneider, I guess the frustration that I'm having is that it seems like causation is being used in two different senses here. One, whether or not she proximately caused the injuries, meaning whether or not it was the bus or some other car that hit Mr. Silva's automobile. But the other one, since there's multiple injuries here, I'm not sure that causation isn't also being used in the sense that whether or not the injury itself was caused by the accident or perhaps could have been a pre-existing condition or no injury at all. I know the first jury found injuries, but how do we know which injuries they found?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because that's actually the next point I wanted to make, which is I believe you're exactly right. There are two distinct issues for causation here. With regard to the second point you made, which is pre-existing or subsequent injury or anything like that, absolutely, that is appropriate and that should be allowed for the damages hearing in the third case. It's that first argument that you raised, the proximate cause, saying that could it have been any of these 10 cars that caused this vehicle that caused the appellant's injuries, I think that was what was inappropriate here. The argument made, and the way this all came about, was there was going to be testimony from the bus driver, from a police officer, and from the appellee herself with regard to what cars hit what. And that was where the objection was made. That was, we deemed, was inappropriate and was not within the remand instructions for a damages-only hearing that was specifically supposed to be against lost wages. But since we withdrew that claim, clearly it should have been just what injuries were related to this accident. not proximately caused, because that was already determined by the jury in the second case.
Okay, so I guess my follow-up question would be, if there are two different sorts of damages here and the jury shouldn't have determined proximate cause, but should have been given some instruction that would allow it to allocate injuries, was your objection to the instructions and verdict form sufficient enough to alert the trial court to the need to make that distinction?
I believe that it was, Your Honor. In specific, there we referred to the notes that are listed in the published jury instruction books, and there was no contributing causes, there was no anything other than Ms. Wilcox being at fault. Matter of fact, she admitted liability in this case, and therefore we believe that the instructions under subsection 6 versus section 9 would have been appropriate, which would have then been much more limiting in that fact.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't the objection simply that this case didn't involve comparative negligence, which it didn't?
Correct.
But there's a similar concept in that there had to be an allocation of damages between injuries.
And you're correct, and that's where allocation between injuries, yes, allocation between who is at fault is something that was improper and which was ultimately what was argued by the appellee and determined by the jury.
Well, the appellee argued both, though. There was one portion of the argument when they said that the bus didn't strike Mr. Silva's vehicle, but then there was another 3 or 4 pages of transcript that talked about the possibility that the injuries weren't reported on time, and so that they might have been not caused by the accident, et cetera, et cetera.
Correct. And we believe that the argument that went to that second piece, the 3 or 4 pages, that was appropriate. But was the jury swayed by that other few pages, that other argument, that was it the bus and Ms. Wilcox causing this multi-car accident ultimately led to this injury? And we believe that was what was improper, and that was what was confusing to the jury, and which we should have the chance to make it clear to a jury in a new remanded hearing what that causation should be.
Do we know from the instructions that the jury was confused about the proximate cause issue as opposed to the allocation issue?
Do we know definitively? No. But it was clear from the way the case was argued and the way that it was presented that that was the thrust of the argument by the appellee. And that's where I believe the confusion comes in. I agree wholeheartedly that causation, whether it be pre-existing, the reporting, all that stuff, is absolutely appropriate and should be heard. It's that other prong that I think gets very confusing and was confusing for the jury.
Well, if you can't tell which way the jury went, whose burden is it to establish the error for appeal?
Well, I believe that it's the appellant's burden, and we believe that
that would be your burden,
correct,
right?
Okay. Yes, Your Honor. And we believe that we've met that burden here. We believe that it's clear that, especially in a case such as this, when the court gives such clear instructions as to what should have been remanded, that it became very confusing early on as to what was the causation issue, and that the argument, if you look at the motion that was filed, that was because they wanted to interject the proximate cause argument, not that second argument of medical causation. And therefore, that's the basis of it, and we believe we've met our burden on that. I would point out that in the briefing that was done, as well as the arguments that were made, it's clear on page 11 of the appellee's argument, for example, that they argue that the impact by the RTD bus could not have been the mechanism of injury. That goes to that first set of causation that you've raised, Your Honor, versus the medical causation. And therefore, we believe that the argument that they've made in their briefing, that they made at trial, all clearly goes to the point of causation that we believe is improper, was an abuse of discretion by the trial court, and therefore we would ask for another remand so we can have it clearly delineated as to what the damages hearing should be. And with that, I'll take some time for rebuttal if necessary.
Yeah. Oh.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Carl Dowdy. I represent Ms. Maria Wilcox, the defendant appellee in this matter, registration number 37757. Ms. Wilcox's argument is based on the cornerstone of negligence law that Ms. Wilcox cannot be held responsible for any damages that her negligence didn't cause. The issue in a trial on damages is what damages did the defendant cause. It's not what damages does a plaintiff have. Mr. Silva attempts to eliminate the causation element in this case and require the jury to assume that any damage that Mr. Silva suffered, past or present, was caused by the November 2004 accident.
Wasn't that decided in the second trial? In the second trial, the jury returned a verdict with money damages. That means they necessarily decided negligence, proximate cause, injury. Why do we do that again?
Yes, Your Honor, the jury in the second trial determined that my client negligently caused the accident and that there were injuries stemming from that accident. The jury awarded $75,000 in economic damages.
Excuse me, let's be quite clear about what that jury decided.
Yes.
I thought it decided as to this plaintiff, Mr. Silva, that he had suffered damages and that those were caused by your client's negligence, which to me is a little different than did she cause the accident?
I agree, Your Honor, that my client, according to the second jury, was found to have caused all those, was found to have caused certain injuries to Mr. Silva.
Would we have to assume that the only injuries it must have found were lost wages in order to allow the last jury to revisit that whole issue?
No, I don't think we should assume that, because Mr. Silva sought damages for pain to his neck, pain to his shoulder, pain in the leg, numbness in an arm, sweating in a hand, muscle fatigue, and lost wages. So we know that Mr. Silva sought damage for all those things, and we know that the jury found that one or possibly more of those injuries were caused by Ms. Wilcox's negligence. But what we don't know is whether the jury only found that it was the headache and the neck pain that was caused by the accident, or perhaps it was also the shoulder pain, or maybe the brachial plexus injury to the ulnar nerve. There was no special verdict for him. We have no way of knowing what injuries that second jury associated with this particular.
So if it's just plexus. If it's a reallocation issue, what is the necessity of relitigating the proximate cause aspect?
We need to determine which injuries were actually caused by this accident. And the plaintiff offered testimony that this brachial plexus injury to the ulnar nerve, for which he allegedly had surgery, had to have been caused by a 40,000-pound bus hitting the side of his vehicle. And Ms. Wilcox's argument is that injury isn't consistent with that type of accident, that type of trauma, and that this brachial plexus injury could be caused by repetitive motion, manual labor, and we presented evidence at the third trial of Mr. Silva's involvement in heavy lifting, his occupation as a mechanic, lifting heavy granite. We offered a video of him doing landscaping. He's a laborer.
Mr. Dowdy, what I don't understand is the first jury found that Mr. Silva was injured in this accident, that your client, that his injuries were caused by your client's negligence, and that he was entitled to damages. And the second jury finds, again, that he suffered injuries in this accident. Now, apparently they found he was injured in this accident. It's not that they found that he was not injured. How can we possibly get to a conclusion that says he was injured in this accident, but your client's not liable for any of those injuries?
Because the jury, Your Honor, didn't take that next step and decide that there was the causation there. The jury in this third trial.
But if I guess what I'm asking is, if it's already been decided that her negligence caused some injury in the September 08 trial, how do we get to a conclusion here that her negligence caused no injuries here?
Because the jury in the third trial, Your Honor, didn't find that Mr. Silva had injuries from the accident. The jury only found that Mr. Silva had injuries. So the jury
injuries from
anything.
So your interpretation of the jury verdict is that he had injuries and none of them occurred in the accident?
That is my interpretation.
Is there any way that the second jury could have awarded damages for lost wages without finding some sort of physical injury from this accident?
Yes, I don't know that would have been a proper way for the jury to look at things, but I certainly think the jury could have decided that he lost wages because of the accident, thinking that he was injured in the accident and possibly he wasn't. I think more likely the second jury probably found that there was some injury from the accident in terms of a physical injury. And then perhaps they associated some lost wages with that accident, and then perhaps they didn't. We know that Mr. Silva sought $140,000 in lost wages during the second jury trial, but we don't have any way of knowing whether the $75,000 in economic damages was comprised of lost wages entirely or possibly not at all.
So how do we get to the point where one jury finds that Mr. Silva was injured in this accident and that your client caused those injuries, and in the second, you're saying the jury finds that he was not injured in this accident, he might have some ailments, but they didn't occur here, and that your client didn't cause them? Don't we have a problem that this was decided in the September 08 trial? And on appeal, the division of this court did not overturn the verdict on liability, didn't overturn any verdict on damages for physical injuries. How is it that you get to try it again?
I think it was necessary to try it again because the third jury had to determine which injuries were caused by this defendant.
Well, let's come at that from another perspective, Mr. Dowdy. Even assuming if you were writing on a blank slate, you might have to bring in some more facts about the cause of the specific physical injuries. I'm looking at the remand order from this court in the prior appeal. It says, judgment of damages shall be vacated and a new trial on damages only shall be conducted so that Wilcox can present evidence regarding why Silva is not entitled to lost future wages. Is that what happened here?
Yes, Your Honor.
This new trial was just about evidence regarding why Silva was not entitled to lost future wages?
I'm sorry, I may have misunderstood the question. I thought you...
Okay, it was a long question.
My apologies. When I answered yes, I was stating that this new trial was on damages only. The issue of the fact that Mr. Silva was illegal in the country, that was put aside when Mr. Silva admitted he was here. But my argument is that when the court remands a case, a trial on damages only, it means a determination of damages that were caused by the defendant.
So shall we read out of the prior remand order the phrase, so that Wilcox can present evidence regarding why Silva is not entitled to lost future wages? I mean, what it sounds to me that under your construction of the remand, that phrase would be meaningless.
I think that part of the remand was taken care of by virtue of the fact that Mr. Silva admitted that he was in the country illegally. If he didn't, we were prepared to present evidence that he was in the country, or is in the country still, illegally, and that therefore he wouldn't be able to make a claim for lost future wages. But since that wasn't necessary, we were able to proceed to a new trial on damages only. And I think it's important to keep in mind here that the jury was clearly advised that Ms. Wilcox caused the accident. Jury instruction number 2 stated to the jury that negligence had already been determined and that Ms. Wilcox caused this accident. Ms. Wilcox's counsel advised the jury that Ms. Wilcox negligently caused the accident.
Didn't the first jury find that she caused the injuries, or at least some injuries?
Sure, I think you might mean the second jury.
I'm sorry, the second jury found that she caused some injury.
They did, and perhaps we did a better job of presenting the evidence the third time around.
Why do you get to do it a third time around is the question that's before us, I believe.
Right, we get to do it a third time around because the jury did not tender from the second trial a special verdict form. There was no indication as to which injuries were caused by Ms. Wilcox. So it was necessary to have a third jury start all over again at the causation issue and determine which of the many physical injuries Mr. Wilcox sought damages for were actually related to the accident.
Under the instructions that were given, how do you know that the jury didn't find that the injuries were the proximate result of Ms. Wilcox's accident or her negligence, but it didn't award damages because it couldn't tell whether the cause of the injuries was the accident or some pre-existing injury or you know, something to that effect?
I think all that we can ascertain from the verdict forms is that the jury determined that Mr. Silva has some injuries and that, quite simply, they weren't caused from the accident. And we don't know if that was because they didn't think that the bus struck his truck. Maybe they thought it was the Dodge truck or another passenger vehicle that struck the side of his truck, and therefore there wasn't enough force to disrupt the ulnar nerve. We don't have that information. We simply know that they determined that, yes, he has injuries, but that those injuries could have been from any other cause. And we presented evidence as to his work history and the fact that he was a manual laborer and that type of injury can be associated with that type of work.
Why do you get to retry that issue? I mean, here what was going on here was that you tried your case and you lost. On appeal, you appealed the issue of future damages and other things. The division of this court told you were wrong on all of the other things, but you were right on future damages, so you can go back to trial and argue about future damages. And instead, what you did was you brought in new evidence and you retried the question of whether he was injured in the accident. How do you get to do that on this remand?
Because the jury did not itemize their verdict.
So the first jury found that this man was injured, or the second jury, the September 08 jury, finds that this man was injured in the accident. And because they didn't say what those injuries were, you were allowed to go back and prove that he wasn't injured in the accident.
Yes.
And what do you rely on for that? It just seems totally anomalous to me.
I rely on the principles of negligence and the fact that causation has to be proven. If the jury had stated, for example, out of the $75,000 in economic damages, that there was $20,000 in lost wages and the remaining $55,000 was for injury to his shoulder, then we could have simply, once we determined that Mr. Silva was illegal in the U.S., removed that $20,000 from the verdict, had a new judgment entered, and no trial would have been necessary.
Or you could have presented the second jury with the record from the September 08 trial, not introduced new evidence, and instructed them that it's already been determined that your client was negligent and that her negligence caused injuries, and that now it is a matter for this next jury to review the same evidence and determine what those injuries were that were caused in the accident. Why is it that you get to bring in entirely new evidence regarding causation on proximate cause? I mean, essentially what you did was you retried proximate cause.
Right, and I didn't try either of the previous cases, and neither did Mr. Schneider, but I don't think that any new evidence was presented. We presented a similar scope and course of evidence regarding causation and the fact that these injuries couldn't have been caused by this accident because there wasn't a mechanism of injury there. And I keep coming back to this point, but I think it's significant in the fact that there was no indication from the second jury as to what injuries it found Ms. Wilcox responsible for. If there had been, then we wouldn't have had to do the third trial, perhaps. But because there was no breakdown of how that $75,000 in economic damages and $5,000 in pain and suffering would be accounted for, it was necessary to come back and retry the causation issue. And we kept it limited to causation, and I think admittedly both forms of causation.
So their verdict was void, even though this court remanded only on the issue of damages, did not remand. I mean, I'm not persuaded, but how do we end up with a void verdict because it was not it was not a specific finding.
You know, I see I'm about out of time. I just answer that real briefly here. I don't think we lose the verdict entirely. We maintain the fact that Ms. Wilcox negligently caused this 10-car motor vehicle accident on I-25. The only issue that we're looking at is what injuries were caused by that accident, and I think that's where it's necessary to try the issue of causation and examine the mechanism of injury.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honor, as I pass, unless you have any specific questions for me.
Mr. Snyder, I guess my question is similar to the one I've just asked Mr. Dowdy. Why is it that this... my first question is the this information about the bus and the physics of the bus and the police officer's report and the bus driver's report, that was all in the first trial?
That was in the first and the second and trial, second. Yes.
And the other question is, why wasn't this jury simply instructed that that it has already been determined that your client was injured in the accident and that Ms. Wilcox's negligence caused some injury to him?
The trial court on the remand specifically ordered that she believed in a damages hearing, you must hear both causation and damages over the appellant's objection. And that was done several times during the trial. She was clear that she believed that in a damages hearing, carte blanche, regardless of the remand of this court, that she had to introduce proximate cause injury, which we believed was improper.
Regardless of the remand, did she have the remand available to her? Did she know? Do you know?
I couldn't imagine. We had it with us. We went over it together in chambers. Absolutely.
Mr. Schneider, do you agree or disagree that the second jury would have necessarily had to have found some form of physical injury in order to have awarded the damages for lost wages, or could they have awarded damages for lost wages in the absence of finding some physical injury?
They would have had to have had found that, because under the jury instructions and under the premise of law, all the elements of negligence, it is clear that you must find the duty, the breach, the proximate cause, and the damages. And they found, by awarding economic damages, whatever it was for, they had to have found all of that to be true. There's no way around it. They couldn't have found lost wages without finding injury, because it makes no sense. Why would you give someone money unless they were injured?
But they didn't have to find all the injuries that were asserted.
Absolutely not, but they had to find some injury.
Okay.
Thank you, counsel. The case of Silva against Wilcox is now accepted as submitted. We will issue an opinion in due course.